Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse, and welcome. Glad to have you with us this evening. And before I go on, so I don't forget it, I want to thank our producer, Ray Schwab, for being here and keeping us online and on course this evening for you. We have a very interesting program. It is about business. It's more focused on maybe women in business, but stay with us. And if you have questions, would like to call in, you're welcome to do so at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And if you call and we're in the middle of a conversation or a sentence, just hang on. As soon as we complete that thought or that sentence, we will be with you online. Okay, so call in if you have any questions. So, what is the show this evening? Before I introduce you to my guests, let me put you on a little mystery here. When you think of all the advances made in the United States since 1963, okay, can you get back there to 1963? We tend to remember all the positive changes in technology, transportation, research. But what about advances for the people that helped to make those advances occur? 50 years ago, Betty Friedan published The Feminine Mystique. This is the 50th anniversary. At that time, Congress also passed the Equal Pay Act to protect employees from wage discrimination on the basis of sex. The EPA Act, as it was known, protects both men and women. It also protects administrative, professional, and executive employees who are exempt under the Fair Labor Standards Act. However, in 50 years, there still remains a gap. Women, on average, must work 15 months and 9 days to earn what men in equivalent positions earn in 1 year. And in the Lehigh Valley, based on a study that was released last year by, I believe it was the Census Bureau, we rank 9 from the bottom in pay equity. So tonight we're going to get some insight on this area, talk about the Paycheck Fairness Act, which has yet to be passed by Congress. And I have two very distinguished guests with me this evening to help us sort through all this information, because you get into a alphabet soup of what is going on. First, no stranger to WDIY is Stephanie Natas. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you.
As you may recall, Stephanie joined us not that long ago, and we talked about what was happening at the YWCA of Bethlehem. I always want to say it the other way. The YWCA of Bethlehem. She is the executive director of the Bethlehem YWCA, and she has a long history of working with women's issues on behalf of women and being recognized for that. She had started her career in Buffalo in 1970 when she joined the National Organization of Women and began her work with the equality of women. She's done a number of things over the years, and our paths have crossed periodically throughout this time. But let me list a couple of the awards and recognition that Stephanie has gotten as well, and then I'll let her add anything else to that. In 2010, she received the Racial Justice Award from the YWCA Mid-Atlantic Regional Council for her dedication to racial issues. In 2010, that marked the first time the YWCA's Mid-Atlantic region presented the Racial Justice Award, so she received the first one. In March of 2012, she received the Gateway to Equity Award from the American Association of University Women. And in 2012, she received the Athena Award from the Women's Business Council of the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber. Stephanie, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we get into the issues?
Yes, I just wanted to add, in addition to having a passion for women's issues, I'm also very concerned about the disabilities movement, and I'm a breast cancer survivor, so I'm out there with breast health education and awareness, and hope we find a cure for breast cancer soon.
Okay, great. Thanks, Stephanie, and thanks for all your advocacy work. It's very much appreciated in the community.
Thank you.
And then with us also is Susan McNamara. Susan is the past president of the AAUW Bethlehem, and she's currently serving on the board of the AAUW. And she's a retired professor of English from William Patterson University. And she was a university administrator, including 2 terms as interim provost. That's quite a responsibility. Wow, Susan, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And Susan, what would you like to share? Maybe a little bit about AAUW locally?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah. When I retired a few years back, I joined AAUW Bethlehem, got hooked in because I love books, of course, and AAU Bethlehem does an annual book fair raising money to support scholarships in the Bethlehem School District. And once I got hooked into the book fair, I got hooked into the branch. And I got hooked in because the mission of AAUW is to advance equity for women and girls. We educate, we advocate, we donate, and we do some research. We are a national organization with about 150,000 members, about 1,000 branches across the country. We also have student affiliates. In fact, Bethlehem has a student affiliate organization at Moravian College, and we have a college-university partnership with NACAC. So we are active within the community in terms of the AAUW mission.
And you're helping the students before they start their career to understand and realize what they're up against.
Yeah, we're very interested in women's leadership and developing women's leadership begins well before one has one's first job.
Great. Great. Well, thank you both for being here this evening. And again, if you want to call in on anything we're talking about or a question that you have regarding pay equity or anything regarding what we're talking about, Ledbetter, paycheck fairness, whatever, we might not be able to answer all the questions, but we would appreciate hearing from you to hear what your interest is. I thought as I did some research for tonight's program that I would just go through a little bit of the history or the evolution of what this is all about. And so I'm going to hopefully not give you too many acronyms and try and remember to say everything correctly. But this all started back in, I guess, about the 30s with the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938. And at that point, this act was put together to set minimum wage, overtime pay, equal pay, and really was sort of directed at child labor standards when it first came into place. And it basically has been the sort of the leading of the fair labor practices in the states until about the 60s. And then we started adding on to it. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was a landmark piece of legislation that outlawed major forms of discrimination against racial, ethnic, national, religious minorities, and women. It ended unequal application of voter registration requirements, racial segregation, and racial segregation at the workplace and facilities that were serviced by the general public. Jobs did not have to be identical, but they must be substantially equal was the underlying theme there. Differentials are permitted only when based on seniority, merit, quality, or quantity of production. So, okay, we go from the 30s to the 60s, then Title VII came into place, and that prohibits employment discrimination based on race, color, religion, section, and national origin. It included sex as an element protected from discrimination, and then this expanded the protection of women from employment discrimination of employers of 15 or more employees. Okay, so that we've got a standard starting there. Then we jump fast forward to 2005 when the Paycheck Fairness Act was proposed to amend the EPAs. And after the fourth affirmative defense, it was the only bona fide factor that we were going to have fairness in job-related positions. Then many of you saw Lilly Ledbetter when you saw the State of the Union with President Obama, and that amended the Civil Rights Act of 64. So it gave a statute of limitations of 180 days for filing an equal pay lawsuit. All right, those are sort of brief. I really got an education when Stephanie said, how about we talk about this issue? So
there's like two other laws that I'd like to talk about,
sure,
which I
Stephanie.
Think are important. They don't exactly have to do with equal pay, but I think they're very important for women.
Okay.
One is the 1978 Pregnancy Discrimination Act. In the past, before 1978, once a woman just knew she was pregnant, she had to quit her job and she wasn't allowed to work. And this law changed it. We're allowed to work while we're pregnant, and our employers have to keep our jobs open for us. And what I can't believe, that was just 1978 when we were told we couldn't work if we were pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's amazing. And then the other law that really helps women is the Family and Medical Leave Act of 1993. It gives employees 12 weeks of unpaid time to care for a child, a parent, or a spouse with a serious medical condition. And I think that's very important for families to have that law. And that was passed during President Clinton's term in office.
Okay, and was that the first time that men were given the option of participating in that leave of absence, do you think?
I think so.
1993?
I think so.
That's what I sort of recall as well.
So.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're able to take some of the responsibility or take the opportunity, depending upon what's happening in their lives. Okay. So we've got all these things in place, but it still exists. Susan, you have these student groups, and you're out there trying to do pay equity. Do you think this is just a gender issue? Is it culture?
I think it is gender. I think it is clearly culture. And I think what is of interest to us is that young women, in general, think that this problem was solved.
I used to think that, too.
And what they don't realize is that when John Kennedy signed the first version of the Pay Fairness in 1963, women were earning 59 cents to every dollar on average for the same job that a man earned. Today, white women are earning about 77 cents to every dollar, same job, comparable job, that men are earning. African American women are earning
69.
Okay, so it is culture and it is
culture.
Gender. Okay.
And Latino women are earning 59, depending on the source, the survey.
Okay.
But it's in that ballpark. So there is both a cultural, ethnic, as well as a gender factor brought into this. So when we have done bake sales with students at the campuses, and one of the things we have them do is, with a fishbowl, draw out a tab that says, you are a African-American male, you are a Latina, and the difference in the cost of the cookie.
Based
if you're a white male, you only pay, you pay a dollar. If you are a white woman, you pay 70 cents. 77 cents.
So that they get to see the relationship.
To understand this is the reality. And I think the other thing they need to come to understand is this is not just a woman's issue, it is a family issue.
Correct.
Because today, so many families are paycheck families.
Well, you almost need to have that to survive. Yeah. And then if you have the single head of household, the majority of them still remain to be women.
That's right.
Yeah, I wanted to add and agree with both of you. It's not, I don't think it's just a fairness issue. It's an economic issue. Mm-hmm. In 2010, the median full-time working man took home $47,715, while the median full-time working woman took home only $36,931. And that's a difference of $10,784. Just think what that money could do in your paycheck or my paycheck.
Correct.
And what we could buy and purchase with it, and how it would change our lives and the lives of our children.
Even childcare. I mean, because childcare is so expensive, you know, it's you're basically working to pay that in some cases, and let alone everything else that you've got to do. Very interesting. Now, the fact that Lehigh Valley is number 9 from, is that something that you guys are aware of as well?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was, I believe, a census information that came out?
It was on, it was in an article and on the website of 24/7.
Okay.
And they said we were ninth out of ten cities that pay women the lowest wage in the country.
Okay, were the other cities in Pennsylvania too?
I don't recall any other ones.
No, I remember Bridgeport, Connecticut. Trying to think, that's the other one that stands out in my mind. Yeah.
So we were the highlight of Pennsylvania, right, being ninth out of ten.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Okay. All right. So why do you think this is happening in the Lehigh Valley? Why is this still, after 50 years, why is this still occurring? We haven't had enough voice in making things change. We haven't had enough leadership. I mean, you talk about AAUW, Susan, wanting to have women in leadership positions. How, after 50 years, are we letting this still happen?
Well, one thing, we think of the percentage of women who are representatives. The balance of power is still in the hands of men in the Senate and in the House of Representatives. So part of it is the voice of women. I think part of it is habit, tradition. I think some of it is lack of transparency. And I think one of the things we're particularly interested in talking about is the fact that in many businesses, corporations, employees have no access to salary guides, to a sense of where the salaries are. And if you don't have transparency, then you don't have a basis for raising the issues or addressing the issues.
Now, I had hoped to have an HR specialist, a compensation specialist, with us tonight, but I was not able to procure that person. One of the things I wonder, and this is probably a question that nobody can answer, or if you guys can, that's great. But when I was in corporate America, and Stephanie, you were there as well, it was like verboten for us to know what our peers were making. I mean, you could lose your job if you found out or communicated what you were making. Where does this come from? What does anybody know?
I don't know, but I just read an article about social media. And the author of the article said, in social media, everything is revealed about people. Nobody keeps anything secret or private anymore. But the one thing the author couldn't find on anybody's Facebook or any place else was a discussion of salaries. Nobody puts their salary out on their Facebook or any place in social media.
I think part of it
is... So that's like kept close to the chest of everybody.
Yeah, and I think part of it, I remember growing up at a time when children were taught not to talk about money publicly. You did not share family facts about money. And I think that's part of a whole cultural habit that certainly is pervasive in employment today. I think it is still part of that trickle down. And there is also the fear, I think, that if one reveals, then there will be women particularly coming forward and saying, I really want equity, and demanding equity.
Yeah.
And then that raises many questions, certainly for employers.
Sure. Now, to get to your point about money and sharing that, I was at a conference this afternoon at Cedar Crest, and the presenter there was saying, in the research that she has done, people would sooner walk around naked than reveal what's in their bank account.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like, yeah. I mean, I was like, wow, that's really, okay. So interesting things. Listeners, if you have any insight on this, please join in the conversation. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, you're welcome to call 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and we're going to have a short break.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem Southside in their 32nd season, presenting Ulysses Dreams, an exploration of origin and destiny, performed by the Touchstone Ensemble. This modern adaptation of the adventures of the hero Ulysses is performed in the form of a song cycle dealing with the characters of Ulysses and his relationship with various women in his life. April 13th to the 21st. For tickets or information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Okay, listeners, we're back. This is Sally Halen, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. And we're talking this evening with Susan McNamara, of the former president of the Bethlehem chapter of the AAUW, and Stephanie Natus, who is the executive director of the YWCA of Bethlehem. And our theme is pay equity. And if you're with us before, you'll understand that this is gender, cultural. There's a whole bunch of things. It's not just a gender issue. It goes beyond that as well. Stephanie, I know from the newspaper that recently you participated in an April 9th event, which was Pay Equity Day. What did we do here in the Lehigh Valley to start to raise some of the level? I think I saw a picture of you with one of the legislative folks.
Yes, we did quite a bit in the Lehigh Valley. We partnered with the AAUW chapters of Bethlehem and Easton, and we said what's really going to change the pay equity issue is if our elected officials vote for the acts that we need them to vote for. So we decided to visit our four elected officials. We've met with Representative Dent. And we did thank him for voting for the Fair Pay Act of 2009 and also the Violence Against Women Act of 2013. That was, you know, very great. And I wanted to mention in 2009 when Congressman Dent voted for the act, he went against his party, which is Republican, and there were only seven Republicans that voted for the act. So that took a lot of bravery for him to do that. We also visited with staff from Senator Casey's office and Representative Cartwright's office, and both those men are in favor of pay equity, and they're doing everything they possibly can to make sure legislation is passed. And next week we'll be visiting with Representative Toomey, and he won't be in office, but one of his staff people will be there to work with us.
Okay, so, and this was something around the country that people were doing. Was it AAU-based, Susan?
Yes, we absolutely were, because one aspect of moving toward change relates to public policy. And public policy carries with it the responsibility for public action, and this is really what we were out there doing, advocating for. There are other dimensions beside public policy. One of the other aspects of this that over time is going to become increasingly important, I think, is the entire value system that we associate with women's work. When we think about women as nurses, as teachers, as social workers, those jobs often are lower paid jobs to begin with in the economic structure. And so we need also to begin to ask people to start taking action in terms of changing the value perspective of jobs that women who tend to be collaborators, who tend to be helpers, that women gravitate toward.
Okay. Now, this whole thing with pay equity, when I read back over in the discrimination, maybe it's Title VII, or it could be the Civil Rights Act, it said basically that there was not supposed to be discrimination for similar jobs just because they're held by different gender or race or whatever. Where are there any teeth in that? I mean, that was 50 years ago, and they said we shouldn't be doing this. And how does that come about? I mean, when they advertise positions.
Well, I think part of it is that corporations, companies, businesses are not held to a requirement in which they must conduct studies of pay, of their pay base and their comparable pay across levels and positions. And I think that's a beginning way to hold folks accountable to identifying where there are, in fact, people holding identical or comparable jobs and where their salaries are.
So I'm just thinking from a business perspective, yeah. You know, most, let's say, a private corporation of 15 or more employees, because that's still, is that still the issue, 15 or?
I think it's probably 20.
20, okay, all right. So a business of 20 or more, private corporation, generally will have an annual audit done of their financial picture. Should they have an annual audit done of their compensation? And should that be something that the stockholders, if it's publicly held?
Yes. That's a wonderful suggestion.
Yes. Yes.
That is excellent.
Absolutely.
Because that would be, I mean, it really should be up to the stockholders to hold the management responsible, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I read recently, I believe it's the state of Minnesota, that requires all public employee agencies, whatever, to do a, I think it's an every 2 year study exactly like that.
Okay.
Which I think is a wonderful start at the public
level.
Employee
you know,
level.
Thinking back to my career in finance, and you were in finance as well, I'm trying to think, I know that we had audits done of our, you know, I don't know whether it was a requirement of the Federal Reserve or what it was, but I mean, our compensation was audited periodically. I guess they just don't do that in other organizations.
Well, when I was working at Finance America, what we had is salary ranges for all the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And you were given a salary grade, and then you could tell what the beginning salary is and what the highest salary you could get for that raise.
Right.
But we never knew who was at the lower end and who was at the higher end, or if there was anybody out of that end.
Okay, yeah, we have pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, and that was the same in
education.
I think it is in higher ed. You get a salary range, particularly if the system is unionized. You get a range, you get hired on a particular, told about that, and that's really all you know. So the comparisons are not done. Comparative studies are not done.
Now, you just raised something interesting that I hadn't thought about, Susan, and that's union. So if teachers union, the women, is there still the discrepancy there, too?
Can be. I think less so in public education.
Okay.
Up through the high school levels. But I think, again, the union negotiates scales at the university college level, a salary scale for rank. So you can be hired as an assistant professor, you get the scale for the assistant professor, but then within that
scale, you don't, it could be.
That's right. So even if you are doing work that is not just comparable, but identical to a male counterpart, you may be earning a lesser salary, even if you come in with similar qualifications.
Okay, and
because that's another factor in higher ed, at least.
Right.
Do you have the degree?
Degrees,
have
the research.
You taught elsewhere, et cetera, et cetera.
Very interesting. The more I get into this, I can see why, Stephanie, you're and Susan, why you're so involved in this, because it's got to pull this apart.
Right.
Make sense out of it.
Yeah. AAUW gravitated naturally. AAUW was created by a small group of women in New England, determined that women should be permitted to have a college education. And they were founded about 130 years ago. And at that time, it was generally believed that intellectual challenge for a woman damaged that woman's health. So we've come a long way from there. So their first fight was to change that cultural view, to show that women could be intellectually challenged, pursue an intellectual goal, and not be physically damaged. Their next goal.
It was the guys that were getting physically damaged because the women were
that's right.
getting smarter. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. The next goal was to advocate and actually provide legal support to women in higher education who were denied tenure because they were women. That discrimination, denying tenure to women in higher ed, still goes on. And AAUW still serves an advocacy role in higher ed. Absolutely. As it does, as it did, for example, recently, last year, I guess, in the Walmart case, in which women employed by Walmart were fighting for equitable compensation.
You know, what's really interesting, Stephanie had and I had met and talked before the show tonight, and I had said to her that I was going to get the book Lean In, that is by Sheryl Sandberg, that's made all the sort of headlines. What I found very fascinating in reading this book, now I'm a college graduate of the 70s, and Sheryl Sandberg is a college graduate of the 90s, and a lot of the things she described in there have not changed from 20 years ago when I was starting into the market and what she's experienced in the market, which just, I was just unbelievable. I kept reading because I kept, this can't be right, you know.
Well, one of the things that I thought about when you had mentioned that we were going to discuss this book was an experience I had when I first came to Finance America. I was in the Methods Research Department, and I was the only female in that department, and it was all men. And every Monday after a football game, they sat around for about an hour, hour and a half, and talked about the game and rehashed it and everything else. And I'm not really a football person, but I said, okay, I better have like a voice in this. So what I would did, I called my brother-in-law in Buffalo, New York, got everything that was going on, like at a Sunday game, and
You got tutored,
exactly. So then when I came in on Monday, I started making comments, and they absolutely ignored me. I was, like, invisible. So when I leaned in, there was, like, no response. They just continued talking among themselves.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, so employers would retaliate. Now, you're saying that they're denying tenure still for so do you still hear of employers that retaliate against employees to have this pay equity? I mean, I guess Walmart is part of that from last year, you said, Susan?
Yes.
So that's still going on.
It is. And I've had many women that work in corporate Lehigh Valley say they support the pay equity issue, but they can't come out and say it because they're worried they'll lose their jobs.
Today,
this day and age and in our community.
Wow.
And it's women that are leaders in their organizations, too.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Okay, so where is the Paycheck Fairness Act? I mean, it came up and it didn't get approved, and you said you would talk to Dent and you're going around to legislators. Stephanie, give us an update from your perspective. Where does it – is it going to come up before Congress again?
I think it's going to come up before Congress again.
Before 2020?
I hope so. I really hope so.
2020, by the way, listeners, is the anniversary of the 100th year anniversary of the women's right to vote. So there's a lot of things sort of leading up to that. But
you know, I think I'm going to take back what I just said, that, you know, I think it's going to come back up for a vote. Another thing that I've been reading about and hearing a little bit and seeing it in the social media is that maybe the women's issues that our president talked about aren't going to take place because there's going to be some trade-offs, and the trade-offs are going to be for the gun control legislation and also for immigration. So those two areas everybody's concentrating on,
and
they're looking at it a little bit like seriously and not the woman's pay equity issue. So maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe they're just going to throw us to the wolves.
Okay.
Well, you were reminding me of what happened. Was it last week? In the Senate.
Yes, they took a vote. Not in the Senate, in the House of Representatives. They took a vote to get the act out of committee, and all the Republicans voted against it, every single Republican. And they did that last Thursday night. And we all felt like it was a slap in the face because all over the United States, women were doing activities for pay equity. They were visiting their elected officials. They were writing, you know, letters to the editors in the newspapers. And then this happened. And I felt terrible that the Republicans, like, didn't even wait till the week after to take
after
that
pay
vote.
Equity.
Yeah,
to take,
yes.
Right. After all the...
Yes.
That is a bit of a slap, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it gave more impetus to us in our unhappy hour.
Okay.
The unhappy hour we held at Steel Sachs last week.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
With women wearing red because we were in the red.
Okay.
And we did some community education about pay equity because there are a number of – last year we did petition signings all across the Lehigh Valley, the three – branches of AAUW, Allentown, Easton, and Bethlehem, took our petitions out, sent them to our national representatives. And as we were talking to women who would come up to the table and we'd tell them about the position, an amazing number of women really are, working women, are not aware of pay and lack of equity.
Yeah.
And so what still needs to be done is a good bit of education in our community.
Well, go ahead, Stephanie.
Most of the women that I talk to that are in their 20s, and if I talk to them about pay equity, they say, oh, I thought that was taken care of 20 years ago. They all think that we took care of it, and it hasn't happened, and they're surprised and shocked.
I think there's an illusion there. When you look at what you're talking about with pay ranges for different jobs, the illusion is that if I'm in a type 1 position and it goes from $10 an hour to $15 an hour, that everybody that's in type 1 position is handled equitably within that range, because we have these ranges and that's what they're there for. So the fact that within that, you know, I'm making 11 and somebody who started yesterday is making 14, you know, we're not aware of.
And right. I think young women see more women working and take that to be more women are being successful.
Because they're...
And that's not necessarily so.
Okay. Now, I did talk to, even though I couldn't get somebody with us who is in compensation, I did talk to a gentleman and asked a question about, or made the statement about, the Lehigh Valley not having the being 72, 77 cents of the dollar that a man's earning. And his comeback, and I'm sharing this with you, audience, because these women also have had this same thing expressed to them. His comeback was that perhaps even though they're rating the same positions, like presidents of companies, that the size of the companies are different, and that's why there's a pay equity difference. So if you're a president of a major firm with 200 employees, that president's position is being compared with somebody who has 15 employees, which obviously would be a discrepancy. And both of you said that you've heard that before.
I would think, however, because we're talking about pay inequity involving women, that there should be a control for that, that all other factors
being equal in the research.
That would make that not so much the case, the explanation for the inequity.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but I would think that. One of the things we're interested in is encouraging more study within the Lehigh Valley so we as women's organizations learn more about what really is so.
If things are held that close to the vest about this, that seems to be a very difficult thing to research, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't know how we begin to do that.
Get women's organizations to join together. Collaboration, and that's something else we need to talk about.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break again, listeners. Again, if you have thoughts, comments, like to get in on the conversation, when we get back, I'll give you the phone number.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Lehigh University and Live Nation, announcing the tickets are now on sale for Bob Dylan and his band with Dawes, Thursday, April 18th at Stabler Arena. More information and tickets are available at StablerArena.com, ComcastTix.com, Stabler Arena box office, or by phone at 866-734-6204.
WDIY is proud to partner with local community organizations to celebrate Earth Day weekend on South Bethlehem's Greenway, Saturday and Sunday, April 20th and 21st. With hands-on green crafts, music, food, and speakers from environmental groups, schools, and businesses, focusing on a sustainable future with activities for the whole family. Co-sponsored by the Sierra Club and the City of Bethlehem. For more information, 610-730-2514 or Sierra Club Lehigh Valley Group on Facebook.
Welcome back, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. And with me in the studio tonight is Stephanie Natus, who's the executive director of the YWCA of Bethlehem. And we have Susan McNamara, who's the past president of the Bethlehem AAUW chapter. And if you would like to comment, ask a question, please give us a call at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Before our break, we were talking about how do we do research and study on an issue that is held so close to the vest, you know, that people don't want to share. They run around naked versus sharing information. And Susan, you came back with it's the women's organizations coming together. Let's talk a little bit about what does that mean in the Lehigh Valley? Who do we all have to pull together? How do we do this?
Well, I was thinking of some of the organizations that we should get to become interested in this. And I thought the Women's Business Council of the Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
The Girl Scouts, the League of Women Voters, the Business and Professional Women's Club of Lehigh Valley, the Society of Women Engineers, the NOW chapters that are in the Lehigh Valley. I think if all of us got together and worked on this, we'd really see some changes.
Okay, and we'd have a lot of power with all those groups coming together.
Yes.
Having worked with trying to organize and collaborate a number of agencies, that's not an easy task. Now, how did AAUW and the Y get together to do the 9th and what you're doing now?
I think it started out with the AAUW approaching the YWCA and asking to get involved in our diversity issues. Because the mission of the YWCA is to eliminate racism and empower women. So they said, you know, we do a book club, but it's all white women that are in it, and we want to be around women of color.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a coalition on racism and race relations, so they joined our coalition.
Okay.
And then we started partnering on other issues, too.
All right.
And it's been a wonderful collaboration.
Okay.
We have, I think, we individuals and the two organizations have really benefited in doing this together. We share resources, we share ideas, and I think women tend to be pretty good at doing that. It takes a lot of time. It takes a certain degree of serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
Takes planting the seed, coming back, planting the seed, coming back. I think we have to, AAUW, we don't take political positions, but we clearly advocate. We have a governmental relations person in Washington. We have an advocacy core of women who walk the halls of Congress. And we have a terrific website that now brings forward public policy issues and an action piece. And AAUW in Pennsylvania is using the website. We have what's called C&Q, and we get policy statements, bills that come up in the state and that allow us then to contact our representatives. And I think the more we use technology to raise the questions, alert women that this bill is coming up, the Pay Fairness Act is coming up to Congress, and you better get on the phone, email, deluge our representatives.
Interesting. Susan, how big is the AAUW nationally?
Nationally, it's about 1,000 branches, 150,000 members.
Wow.
And a large, huge membership in California, good-sized membership in New York. And we are getting ready to have our national every other year convention in New Orleans this year. And a good bit of what we do across the country is advocacy. AAUW also, for example, did a research project, did a publication that has received widespread notice called Why So Few Women in Science, Technology, Math, and Engineering. Their most recent publication is called Graduating to a Pay Gap, and it is a study of first-year college graduates and what the researchers learned across the country is that young women in identical or comparable positions earn about, and these are bachelor degree people.
Four-year college.
Yeah. About 82% of what young men, what their male peers are earning. So they do a good bit of research, which gets then some more national recognition.
Now, and according to Sheryl Sandberg, part of the reason that happens is because the women aren't sort of trained, coached to ask for more, where male counterparts will. And so it's not necessarily that the employer is, you know, setting different levels when they first start out. It's more that, well, if you ask for it, then, you know, I'm going to give it to you. But if you don't ask for it, I'm getting a break here.
And what we're doing tomorrow at Moravian College is a workshop for women on how to negotiate your first salary. It's for for college senior women, and I think Northampton Community College students are also coming in for that.
Good.
So we're really hoping that'll help women when they go out and look for their first job, and if they're offered a job, don't take that first offer.
Yeah,
ask for something a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know, when we talk about the Lehigh Valley and the fact that we ranked so low in that top 10 list there, or bottom 10 list, whatever, I'm wondering if part of the reason for that, when if you say the cutoff for this pay equity is like 20 employees, 72% of our businesses have 9 or less employees in the Lehigh Valley. So, you know, we do not have the depth of big businesses. We don't even have the depth of businesses with 20 or more employees.
And the big businesses are in those social service areas, health care.
Correct.
Where the women who work are often working in those jobs that are less valued economically. They are highly valued in terms of the services that these women provide. But economically, they have been less valued. And I think that may be part of the explanation here.
Yeah, that I'm sure there are other parts of the country that have the same thing because the economic environment has changed. Yes. The business profile has changed, and a lot of people are doing small businesses.
And this is not to say that we do not recognize that there are some women who are certainly earning salaries that are identical or comparable to those of men. The question is how many and at what levels.
Right. And when can we just all be people?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, when it doesn't really matter, we're just doing our job and getting paid. So is there, with the Paycheck Fairness Act, is there a downside to it? So if it is passed, so many things in Congress carry little things along with them. Is there anything that you two are aware of that, you know, if this gets passed, it's going to, you know, throw something else out, or you haven't heard anything or seen anything in the research?
No, everything is positive for the legislation.
It's just a matter of getting it on the out of committee and into the...
And voted on and passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Stephanie, I didn't ask you this before, so I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. When it came out originally, where was the logjam? What happened to it? Do you remember?
It's always the Republicans voting it down and not passing it. So each time a bill is voted down, you have to introduce it all over again. It has to go next into committee all over again. And there's a Senate committee and a representatives committee. So it's got to go through the two committees. It's got to pass in both the committees, and then the law is combined and it has to pass.
Okay. So
each time it's voted down, you have to start the whole process over again.
So let me just try and sort through this. So if it's, let's say, started in the Senate, it goes to the committee, it comes out, it has to get passed, then it has to go to the House of Representatives?
No, both are looking at the bill at the
same time.
And they're both making changes to the bill at the same time.
But they're not necessarily making the same changes.
Correct.
So it comes out of committee with different twists and turns.
Mm-hmm. And what's so difficult about this, it can't even get out of committee, which is very hard.
Okay, so we've... Go ahead, Susan.
Well, when we think about what happened with the domestic violence bill fairly recently, and the issue that was pulled out that became so controversial was the law in relation to the protection of Native American Indian women. And
that was pulled out of the law?
That was the pulled out by those who wanted to hold the whole passing it back. So that was the fight.
Right. And what the real issue was, the on the Indian reservations, mm-hmm. the Indians wanted their laws to rule instead of the United States laws.
Okay.
And I felt, and I could be totally wrong, that the men would continue raping the women on the reservation. There's so much rape, and nothing would be done to punish them. So I am really glad that that was a stumbling block and that that was changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but there was great resistance.
Yes.
And I think what happened there, just a single piece, slowed down for weeks. And I don't know how for long previous to that. But when it came forward this past year, it just was held up and held up until finally the pressure was such that it did pass. But that was the single
piece
roadblock.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, what I also find interesting, and you know, Republicans are supposedly pro-business, and you would think that that would be pro having good leadership in business, whatever gender that is. I just find it amazing. The legislators, and I'm going to point to the male legislators, they have wives, they have daughters. I'm just sort of baffled by why this is still occurring at this day and age in 2013.
I think there are still the arguments that the male is the breadwinner, the male has to hold the family together, and women don't need the money. I think that is cemented up here in all too many instances.
But, you know, today there are more women graduating from college. There are more women with MBAs, and there are more women with PhDs. So I think it's time that we should be paid fairly, have those jobs that pay well, get promoted.
Well, and I think, you know, you say you're having this negotiation seminar tomorrow at Moravian. You know, part of it is, and it goes back to, you know, how we're brought up as children, but to, you know, young women today, and even at that conference today, they were talking about, well, I want to have children. So, you know, I put the brakes on my career because I don't, and Sheryl Sandberg goes through that whole scenario as well. You know, what do you do? And we're one person. We're one in the same. So why do you have to do that? I mean, it's just, I can't believe that we're still struggling with that.
Yeah. And what she says is, yes, you may want to take time out. Don't cause that to think that you cannot step back in.
Correct.
And you should think life has many phases, and you need to be persistent. In terms of all facets of a career, you need to aim for the highest.
Right. And I've noticed in women business owners, because that's, you know, where my concentration is, not in women, but in small business, that there's a tendency to maybe not bid for a job or not mm-hmm. do something because we don't feel we have the expertise for it. But our counterparts will go ahead and say, okay, I can do it. And then they'll think, well, okay, I got to figure out how to do it now. I've got the job. You know, women are very hesitant to sort of go out there without feeling that they've got the expertise or the resume to support that.
Yeah. Stephen, you know, was telling me.
I've heard a similar story from Sam Bennett, but it has to do with women in politics. She says, like, a man will look in the mirror and say, wow, I'm Senator material. And if someone goes out and asks him, would you run for Senate, he doesn't hesitate. He says, yes, I will. But when you go to a woman, she'll hesitate. She'll say, I'm not qualified. And there was one example of a woman that had a master's in education and in administration, and she was approached to run for school board. And she said, oh, I don't think I'm qualified to do that. And then there's so many people that had to go and talk to her before she would, like, agree to do it. So it's probably the same thing in business.
Absolutely. And that's not the employer's problem. That's what we as a society sort of ingrain at a very early age or reinforce.
Yeah. And there is also some evidence to say that if given the choice all the way through, whether it is a junior high class president election up to a major political position or a business opportunity, that if women are given the choice and there is a man in the competition, they will often go to support the man against the woman. There is a film that many of us have been looking at called Misrepresentation. It's about the media's role in the imaging of women and young girls. And it just gives a lovely illustration of a young woman who says, I can be a leader, I can be a class president. And in every instance, she came in close, she came in second, but women, more of her female classmates voted for the boy. And that this goes up through the political world, it comes into the world of adults. And we also, as women, need to continue to work at being supportive of other women.
Yeah, and that's where your idea of pulling all the women's organizations together to form a consortium of such to sort of push those there. Okay, we're getting close to our timeline. Boy, this has gone quickly. Thank you both. And listeners, I hope you have enjoyed this as well. I'm going to ask Stephanie and Susan if there's like one last thing, comment, maybe at the website, the AAUW website, what it is, so that you want to leave our listeners with from this show.
What I want to leave the listeners with is I want to ask women to run for office. That's one of the ways we'll get the legislation that we need passed, because women will be supportive of it.
Okay, and if they want to do that, they can talk to you at the Bethlehem YWCA, and you will help them figure out how to do it.
Definitely.
Okay. All right.
Yes, and I would definitely urge women particularly to Google AAUW National. They have programs in the box. They have action opportunities to contact with representatives. They have updates on bills that are going through Congress. We need to get involved. We need to stay involved. And use the technology to our benefit.
Okay. So we've got AAUW and we've got the YWCA of Bethlehem here tonight. If you as a listener want to get engaged in something, you know, contact these folks and get involved, because that's the only way things are going to change. We're not going to do it, you know, just sitting back passively. So, listeners, thanks so much for being a part of Lehigh Valley Discourse tonight in our conversation on pay equity. And, Ray, thanks so much for being our producer tonight. Really appreciate it. Please stay tuned as Celtic Fair comes up next with Rick Weaver. And you have a wonderful evening, listeners.